Damn.
Okay. We're good, though.
Dorian? Nice. Okay.
Welcome to the Pre-Dead Boys. It is the award-winning podcast about the history and culture of death and decomposition. My name is Dorian. With me, as always, is Max. Max, how are you on this brisk fall afternoon?
It is brisk. My windows in my apartment are really bad, so I'm a little chilly, which is ironically like the exact opposite of how I feel like I've been for most of our recording process, because this place gets really hot the entire rest of the year.
Yeah, I remember before quarantine recording in your place, and it's like lots of heavy, thick carpeting and good old, like, your neighborhood is like all 100-year-old houses. You know, they're either super drafty or they're like these fucking airtight, like monolithic buildings that have no ventilation at all whatsoever.
Yeah.
And I feel like yours, you know, you've got a really comfy pad, but I would put it in the latter category, I would say.
Yeah. Yeah, there's definitely a sense where, like, I'm recording in the bedroom right now. And when I walk downstairs, it feels like getting into a pool.
Ooh.
There's like a 10 degree difference in the temperature, which is wild.
Kind of refreshing. Yeah.
It is nice. I don't mind it.
You know, it's probably fitting too. You know, it is fall. It is the spooky season. And, you know, Maybe it's kind of fitting that it feels good to be indoors and hide away from the spooky things that await us outside.
Yeah. Katrina and I have been watching a lot of spooky movies, which is fun.
Yeah. What recommendations do you have right now?
I love Mandy. Mandy was great. Hint, hint. I saw Nightmare Before Christmas for the first time.
Haven't you said you're not really a big Tim Burton fan?
Do not like Tim Burton.
At all.
Do not like the Burtonator. No.
The first time I'm sure anybody has referred to him as the Burtonator. So what did you think of Nightmare Before Christmas then?
I thought it was fine. I don't know. Okay. We watched Corpse Bride 2, and I liked that more.
Okay.
I don't know.
Yeah, just not feeling it. That's fine.
We are currently watching The Haunting of Bly Manor.
Yeah, I did want to say congratulations to you on your co-starring role in the new Netflix series, The Haunting of Bly Manor.
Thanks, man.
I was stunned. I saw a promotional poster for that show, and if you guys listening haven't seen it, there is a guy who has, like, spitting image. It's Max McKenna, almost to a T. Like, the glasses, the thick mustache. I feel like your hairstyle is exactly the same. It's stunning how well they it's amazing. It's amazing how the special effects artists did such an incredible job of creating a person that looked like you. Because clearly they were inspired by us and like our ghost episodes and like our conversations about that. So shout out Netflix. We're still waiting for our royalty checks, but that's okay. We still love you.
I would like that. I would like a check from that. I feel like it lays it on a little thick, but it's good. You know, it's nice episodic horror. I don't know.
Lays it on thick, like with the drama or the jump scares, or like what part of it is too much for you?
They do the thing that where they show you like the monster too early. And, you know, we're like four episodes in and I feel like I'm already like, what else is going to happen? I feel like we've accomplished most of what the show is set out to do, but I don't know. Maybe it's going to turn.
Right on. Let me know what you think when you finish it up. Cause right now I've been watching, the the return of Twin Peaks. And I just basically don't want to watch any other show right now. So let me know if Haunting of Bly Manor ends up being worth it. Otherwise, I'm just going to be in a weird, like, Lynch hole and watching this very insane TV series wrap up.
I'm fine with you being in a hole. I'm not going to stop you. I'm not going to get you out of there. So
yeah, let me live in my Lynch hole.
Yeah.
Well, right now, we should get into a death hole. This is an award-winning podcast about death. And my understanding, Max, is that you have put together something for us to discuss today.
I have. It is October. You know, we've done October episodes the past 2 years where we've talked about vampires and zombies and Frankensteins and necromancy.
Lots of real stuff.
Yeah. And like, honestly, I had kind of like a hard time. I have a hard time thinking of topics normally, even at points, because we've done a lot. But these spooky ones are even tougher because it has to be like even more specific in that, like, it has to be tangential to what we'd normally talk about, where like we wouldn't cover it in a mainline episode, but also be deathy.
We got to keep it deathy.
Gotta keep it deathy. But I do think that I found a good one today, and it's a good spooky topic, because we're gonna be talking about ghosts today.
I love ghosts.
Are you a ghost fan?
I enjoy ghosts. I will say that I think that ghosts in fiction can be kind of boring sometimes. It's like a little bit of a, it's hard to feel threatened by ghosts. Sure. They seem like, you know, what, how much harm can they really do to us?
You, like, wiggle through me?
Yeah. Or sometimes it's like you're watching a movie with a ghost and it's like the ghost scared someone so bad they had a heart attack and died. And I just feel like that's anticlimactic. It kind of sucks. So as far as a scary thing, it's like, I don't know how scared I am of ghosts, but I find them fascinating. Ghost stories are really interesting.
Cool. Yeah, we're going to talk a little more about like our personal feelings about ghosts and ghost stories and stuff like that in a bit here.
Say our personal ghosts, our personal that ghosts live with us.
Our skeletons in our closets. I don't have any skeletons in my closet. It's just my dog.
Yeah, I keep all my skeletons out in the open, not in closets. So
it's true. You were showing them off just before we started this call. He's showing it off again.
That's a fake one, though.
Was that like a phrenology skull? Why is it all different colors?
No, it's called an exploded skull. It's used for like, you know, kind of anatomical study. So it's these different colors because these are each actually different pieces.
Yep.
And you put this together like a puzzle when you first buy it. But it's like all the different, they're labeled too, like all the frontal, the temporal, the zygoma, the nasal cavity. They're all labeled with like the individual anatomical names of each part of the skull.
That's neat.
It's very fun.
Yeah.
I just keep it on my desk sometimes as drawing reference for illustration work, but also like having a little jaw hinged skull that I can play with is kind of, it whittles down the time in a fun way. I enjoy it.
Crack a walnut open or whatever.
Well, it's all plastic, so it doesn't really have that much force, but I don't know. I guess I could keep trying.
Sounds like it's a poor craftsman who blames his tools. So,
damn, dude, roasting my skull.
You want to get into it?
Oh, we should get into it.
Cool. Let's crack into it with the official Pre-Dead Boys haunt into the topic moment.
Ooh.
On my end, brought to you by Giant Eagle Lemon Lime. Tastes like a Sprite.
And on my end, it's brought to you by LaCroix High
Biscuits. I like hibiscus.
I haven't had this one yet.
It's good.
Let's see how it is.
You're going to like it.
All right.
Shut up, it's fine.
Max, what have you done to me?
Shut up, it's fine. It's good.
No, it's actually, it is really tasty.
I feel like that was one of the more the sexier flavors of LaCroix that they rolled out. When they rolled out like the key lime and stuff.
Oh yeah.
Trying to make it like a little fancier.
Yeah, they got a little saucy with it.
Yeah. Ooh, my espresso is kicking in. I pounded like 3 shots of espresso right before this.
Fuck yeah, dude. This is going to be the most caffeinated episode of Pre-Dead Boys yet.
Yeah.
I'm stoked. It's been a really long time. I'm going to probably edit this out, but it's been a really long time since we've recorded. I've missed you. I've missed talking about fun death stuff. I'm excited to get into it.
Same, man.
And maybe that's just the yerba kicking in for me. But I'm very caffeinated and very excited.
Hell yeah. Well, cool. So, like, honestly, I didn't really know what the direction for this episode was going to look like before I started. And, like, I didn't know how the outline was going to work. Because, like, if you talk about, like, ghosts, it's, like, it's so, like, nebulous and large of a topic that we could have gone anywhere with this. And we may even do, like, a part two on this at some point, just because when you're talking about something that has existed in, like, every culture ever, there's a lot of information and a lot of ways that it gets, like, interpreted and mixed in. It's cool, but I think I've got some good info here. It's going to be fun.
And it is funny. That reminds me of every time that somebody has talked to me about the podcast. I've had a couple friends who were like, so are you worried that you're going to run out of stuff to talk about?
Oh, absolutely.
And which, you know, I understand, run out of stuff to like research. I don't know. We'll cross that bridge if we ever get to it. But at the same time, do you know how many people die? Do you know how many people have died? Like hundreds. So there's at least hundreds of episodes that we can record.
Man, I thought that's the thing. Like, I thought I was hitting a wall around like trains. Like trains felt like a Hail Mary. And then it was like, we've done like 40 episodes since then.
Right.
So I don't know. We're never going to die.
I promise I will never die.
Hell yeah. This is kind of a fun thing too. Kind of a little peek behind the curtain for the listeners. Whenever I make notes for Dorian, I will Google like skeleton and then whatever word kind of the theme for the episode is. So like skeleton politician or I don't know, just stuff like that. And for this one, I had to Google skeleton ghost, which is an oxymoron. But I hope that what I found was satisfactory for you.
I'm trying to understand, is this an album cover for like a shitty CD or something?
No, this is a this is the image file for a product that you can buy on wish.com.
Ah, okay. Cause it says at the top, acoustic skeleton ghost. And there are two features listed here of the skeleton ghost. One, eyes can emit light. Two, make horrible ghost sound.
I got a real kick out of that.
That's great sales, honestly. Can't wait to hear it make a horrible ghost sound.
It's acoustic too, so I don't know if like you have to make the sounds yourself. Because that implies it's like, not electric.
Right, don't bother plugging it into an amplifier or running it through an effects chain, because it's just gonna come out all natural.
Yeah, I might buy this. I might buy it for real.
Research for the podcast.
Spend all of our Patreon money. So I think most people listening to this know what a ghost is, but because I'm an etymology nerd, I'm gonna make you read the etymology of the word ghost from our good friends at the Online Etymology Dictionary.
I'm down with it. Ghost, noun, from the Old English, ghast, meaning breath. Good or bad spirit, angel, demon. From Proto-West Germanic, ghiatstas.
You nailed it, from what I can tell.
Thanks. This is conjectured to be from a Proto-Indo-European root, geis, used in forming words involving the notions of excitement, amazement, or fear. Ghost is the English representative of the usual West Germanic word for supernatural being. In Christian writing and Old English, it is used to render Latin spiritus, a sense preserved in Holy Ghost. the sense of disembodied spirit of a dead person, especially imagined as wandering among the living or haunting them, is attested from late 14th century and returns the word toward its likely prehistoric sense.
I grew up Catholic, and there is kind of a fun thing that it mentioned there, how, like, when I was going to Mass, we would say Holy Spirit, but, like, my grandparents say Holy Ghost still, which is kind of fun. But what that definition kind of shows us is that the history of the word ghost is super long and very complicated. The history of ghosts as, like, beings or entities is equally as confusing and meandering. And this makes a lot of sense because that word, ghost, is tied in a lot with the history of religion and belief. So, like, you see that, you know, the original word kind of connotated, like, a good or bad spirit or an angel or a demon. When you have something like a ghost that is so experiential and subjective, it's going to go through a lot of iterations as the idea evolves.
Makes sense.
Yeah, and this is kind of where I wanted to just have a brief little hit about our personal feelings about ghosts. I'm not a believer in the ghosts that I think you think of when you think of ghosts.
Okay.
Like, someone died in a really traumatic way and now their spirit haunts the world. I don't know.
Wow. A non-believer in entirety.
Yeah. But, like, I grew up watching a lot of, like, the unsolved mystery stuff where they would do, like, ghost hunting and go into someone's house with, like, the EVP recorder and try and get the voice, which is EVP is electronic voice phenomenon, where they would try and get a recorded ghost voice. And normally it would just sound like...
That sounded like a ghost right there.
Yeah. But they'd be like, oh, here's the ghost voice. You can hear it say, like, Jeremy in there or whatever.
I like the idea of the ghost just saying a name that it thinks sounds cool. That's it. Doesn't even know anybody named Jeremy.
They only get, like, three words.
He's just a really big Pearl Jam fan, dude.
It's the ghost of someone who died yelling out for Jeremy to be played as an encore to Pearl Jam.
Jeremy Spoker.
Did you grow up on that stuff? Did you watch any of those, like, unsolved ghost mystery shows?
A little bit. What's funny, we were just talking about how obsessed I am with Twin Peaks right now. I just realized that our youth was kind of the heyday of, like, supernatural stuff and alien stuff being in the mainstream, I feel like. Like, Twin Peaks was airing shortly before they started X-Files, and Unsolved Mysteries was not just playing, but syndicated like crazy, I feel like.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, we were kids and probably didn't, like, engage with that stuff on the same level, but we had Goosebumps and stuff. Like, I feel like our childhood was very saturated with a lot of, you know, interest media that is interested in ghosts in the supernatural. And I always thought it was interesting, but, like, I didn't get, you know, super duper into it. I remember some friends having stories of, like, swearing that they saw ghosts.
Uh-huh.
And I'll just say, personally, I am not a non-believer in ghosts. I feel like I'm unconfirmed. I'm ghost agnostic. I am open-minded. I am open to the possibility of ghosts, but if there were some kind of concrete proof that proved that there were never ghosts on planet Earth in any way, shape, or form, then it wouldn't devastate me. You know what I mean?
Sure.
I'd just be like, okay, but, you know, are there some kind of, like, spiritual remnants of people that get stuck here on our plane of existence? Who's to say? I don't know. I am not so arrogant and close-minded that I would assume that it's impossible, Max. How about that?
All right, man.
Fucker.
That's, like, I guess when I think of the existence of ghosts. There's kind of two schools where there's like the spirit, like almost like an evil spirity thing, or maybe good, I don't know, but like more of a spirity thing. And then there's like, this used to be the soul or whatever of a person that existed. And we are going to talk in a bit about how like that distinction kind of came up in history at one point. Like people didn't always believe that ghosts were of people. You know, because I think when we talk about ghosts, the thing that pops into your head is like, that's the ghost of a living person, you know?
Right. Dead people becoming ghosts.
Mm-hmm. And I think if you think about it like that, it doesn't freak me out too much. Because, like, you know, I think the theory that people who, like, adhere to that belief in ghosts is like, there was something, like I mentioned before, traumatic that kind of imprinted some kind of energy in a location.
Hmm.
And that doesn't freak me out. But, you know, when you talk about like, maybe it is some like, maybe ghosts are like some spiritual thing that we don't know about that are more powerful than we are. That freaks me out a lot. Which is why I'm like, I don't really buy into that idea because mostly I'm just scared of it. Like I was listening to a podcast series. This podcast, Astonishing Legends, did like a 5-part series on this haunted house in Kansas, which I'll link to in the show notes. But I made it like 2 episodes in and was just too freaked out to keep listening.
Ooh, okay.
So I don't know. You can check it out if you want. But a thing that they said on there that I thought was really good, actually, was they were like, when you look into this stuff, you have to be careful of opening doors that you don't know how to close.
Mm.
And I think that's kind of a reason why I've been hesitant to open some of those ghosty doors.
Sure. That idea of like, you kind of welcome in whatever spirit or ghost or whatever into existence or into your life if you start going down that rabbit hole.
Yeah.
A little bit.
Yeah.
That is always an interesting concept for me. I know what's probably my pick for favorite horror movie of the year so far. There's a movie exclusively on Shudder called Host. Have we talked about Host? It's not to be confused with The Host, which is a Bong Joon-ho monster movie. That's
is this
different.
Like an hour long?
Yes, it is an hour long movie that takes place entirely over a Zoom call.
Yes. Okay.
And I know that that sounds infuriating to watch, but it's actually really well done, super clever. But basically, these friends are in quarantine this year, and they decide that it would be fun to get together and have an online seance through Zoom.
Mm-hmm.
And without spoiling anything big, that's exactly what they do, is they end up inviting things into their world that have negative consequences. And that's kind of where the horror of the movie comes from. I definitely recommend it. It's a great horror movie.
Yeah, well, check it out.
I've seen it 3 times so far, actually.
Oh, damn, dude.
Yeah. Just like happened to be like, oh, watch it with my roommates who are home, and then watch it with my girlfriend. And oh, one of my roommates didn't see it yet, so we're going to watch it again. But yeah, it's great. Yeah. But I understand that like, you know, maybe some of your belief is a little bit willful, or your disbelief. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe it's a safety measure that you are kind of taking as a precaution.
Yeah, like a little mental lock on that door.
Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. Just the evolution of how humanity has felt about ghosts from like prehistory to like the stuff you were talking about, like Goosebumps and Ghostbusters, is really interesting. And honestly, one of the most interesting things that like I think I found in researching this was that like specifically the connotation that a ghost is, to quote what you said earlier, the spirit of someone who used to be alive but is now dead. Did you say that? Or am I just...
Disembodied spirit of a dead person?
Yeah, like specifically that connotation of ghost, meaning like they were alive, now they're dead, and now they're like a hazy, foggy, being. So he didn't show up till the 14th century. Which is neat. I would have thought it would have been around for a lot longer than that.
Yeah. Right. And it is kind of surprising.
And like, it kind of threw me a bit, because you remember our necromancy episode where we talked about like ghosts, quote unquote ghosts, showing up in the Old Testament of the Bible, which is, you know, thousands of years old, where you have the ghost of Samuel being summoned by a witch in like kind of a proto seance ceremony.
Right.
And I'm like, well, that seems like a ghost right there. Like, why is that not? Why do people not think of ghosts as being like risen people?
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point. Samuel was alive. He died, then was resummoned.
Yeah.
Why is that not the kind of standard for what we define ghosts as at that point in time?
Yeah, I think a lot of that kind of is tied into the idea of ancestor worship, which was a lot more prevalent in the Near East and really the world at the time. Like, when you think about ancestor worship, there was a sense that the people who came before you died and their spirits would, you know, bless or curse you. So you had to appease them in a certain way. Like Coco. Coco is a movie that has a lot of that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have a feast and you have that little memorial, the Orienda, I think it's called, for your ancestors. And in those instances of ancestor worship, they're not really like ghosts. Your ancestors are not quote unquote haunting you.
Right.
They're not able to manifest themselves in a certain way and act of their own free will. They can cause good things to happen, but they exist only in a spiritual sense. And it feels weird to say that, because like, when we think of a ghost now, we're like, well, they're not really like physical, but there's something that's not just spiritual, you know? I'm going to have you read something here that kind of tracks how we've imagined ghosts to be through literature over the centuries. And I think this provides a really interesting window into the evolution of what ghosts can and can't do and what they are and aren't. So yeah, go ahead and read this. I'm excited to explore these like three forms of what ghosts are.
In the ancient Middle East and Egypt, ghosts were thought to be created at time of death, taking on the memory and personality of the dead person. They traveled to the netherworld, where they were assigned a position and led an existence similar in some ways to that of the living. Relatives of the dead were expected to make offerings of food and drink to the dead to ease their conditions. If they did not, the ghosts could inflict misfortune and illness on the living. In ancient Greek literature, ghosts appeared in Homer's Odyssey and Iliad, in which they were described as vanishing as a vapor, gibbering and whining into the earth. Homer's ghosts had little interaction with the world of the living. Periodically, they were called upon to provide advice or prophecy, but they do not appear to be particularly feared. Ghosts in the classical world often appeared in the form of a vapor or smoke, but at other times they were described as being substantial, appearing as they had been at the time of death, complete with the wounds that killed them. Ancient Roman literature features some of the first appearances of haunted houses. In 50 AD, Pliny the Younger described the haunting of a house in Athens, which was bought by the Stoic philosopher Athenodorus, who lived about 100 years before Pliny. Knowing that the house was supposedly haunted, Athenodorus intentionally set up his writing desk in the room where the apparition was said to appear and sat there writing until late at night when he was disturbed by a ghost bound in chains. He followed the ghost outside where it indicated a spot on the ground. When Athenodorus later excavated the area, a shackled skeleton was unearthed. The haunting ceased when the skeleton was given a proper reburial.
That's kind of neat, right? Like,
you could, we got our first ever spooky haunted house.
Right? That is. That's like what people trace the history of the haunted house back to.
Fascinating.
Which is neat, right?
Yeah.
You can kind of see like these three like forms of what ghosts are emerging here. Where like a little ghost myself there.
Expelling a ghost from your own body, I see. This man's possessed.
Yeah, good God. So you've got like the Middle Eastern ghosts, which that brings in a lot of like afterlife connotations. Like when you think about how the Egyptians buried mummies with the goods they would need to get through the afterlife. When you died, your spirit was kind of created in a new form. And then you just kind of lived like a second life as a ghost. You know, like you still had like a ghost job and you had things that you had to do. Like you had tasks, but you weren't involved in Earth in a really meaningful way. Like you could affect things and do like bad things to your relatives if they didn't appease you. But you kind of had like a new life to live.
Huh.
And that's that like afterlife sense.
Yeah. I appreciate that there's still the opportunity to play pranks, you know. That is an afterlife worth living if you can still play pranks on people. And, you know, if you just don't like what your family or friends are doing, you can fuck with them a little bit. Love it.
Yeah.
Love to see that.
So then the Greek description, which was the second one you read, is that very, like, shade, shadow sense of a ghost, where, like, they're kind of locked into one specific place, and they can't really do a lot. Like, you remember in our necromancy episode, how we talked about, like, oracles would mix, like, dog blood and, like, all kinds of gross stuff together and then bring a ghost back, and then they would be like, where did you bury this treasure you hid? And the ghost would say, over there.
Right.
Like, you know, these ghosts almost were like strategy guides or something. They could answer direct questions, but they couldn't act.
Yes.
Like, you remember, I don't know if you'd remember this, because I don't remember what game systems you had when you were a kid. Nintendo used to have a little number that was attached to all of their game booklets.
Yeah.
Where you could call the phone number and be like, I don't know how to beat this puzzle. How do I do it? And then some guy on the phone would tell you like how to win that part of the game.
Huh. Is that what that phone number was for? I thought it was just like a general like, hey, my Game Boy's not working. What do I do? Where do I send it? Like a help hotline for technical issues?
No, they had like actual strategy help people.
Huh. That's... Is that toll free?
Oh, no. It was like $4 a minute.
Oh, no. Okay.
I was never
I didn't know about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank God I didn't even know it existed.
Yeah. But like, that's what these Greek ghosts were like. You would just like pick up your, I don't know, phone and ask them a question and they would answer, but they couldn't like come in and play the game for you or anything like that.
Yeah. Give you a helpful little guidance.
Yeah. And then we have like the Roman ghosts, which this is when ghosts as we know them, when that idea kind of happens.
Okay.
You know, because like you read that story and you were like, oh, that's like the first haunted house. And I mean, exactly, like this is where we get that trope of someone who died a traumatic or wrongful death or really charged death and is trapped or stuck or, you know, chained to a location until they can be appeased.
Mm-hmm.
This is the type of ghost story we see with like ghost soldiers and the ghosts of people who have been murdered and then they disappear when the crime is solved or something like that.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of like a lot of the people who are like scamming people who are mourning. What do I want to say? Like, if you listen to like true crime stuff, you hear sometimes that like someone is murdered and then the family brings in like a medium to try and solve the crime.
Right.
That's this.
Yeah.
You know, if you can find the body, if you can like create justice, the spirit can rest. And that goes back to this Roman sense of what a ghost was.
Huh. Okay.
And because there's like, you know, these three different branchings of what ghosts are, I opted for the rest of this episode to stick with the Roman one because that's what we think of today. And I think that's the form that people are most familiar with.
Hell yeah. That's also the form that provides us with the most opportunity to close some cases, to bring some justice to dead people. And that's what we set out to do when we made this podcast, right? It's to solve all the world's problems.
That's why I bought that blue and green van and got a dog.
Ranks Maxwell.
That's what I'm doing over here.
is that why you got Julep?
That's why I got Julep, so she could help me solve crimes.
She is kind of scrappy do size.
She is scrappy.
Which scrappy is probably the more helpful one because Scooby is kind of, you know, difficult to understand. I think he just gets stoned in the van with Shaggy all the time and probably doesn't do much. You're giving me some looks like
I'm giving
you
looks.
You don't know what you're
talking
about.
You clearly have not seen the live action Scooby-Doo with Rowan Atkinson where Scrappy-Doo is the villain.
What?
Yeah, he's the bad guy.
That's blasphemy.
Spoilers for the like Matthew Lillard, Cher Michelle Gellar, Freddie Prinze Jr.
Yeah, if you're really into that live action Scooby-Doo shared universe, sorry for the spoilers.
Yeah, Scrappy's the villain in that one.
That's fucked up, dude.
Yeah.
Scrappy's adorable. Why would they make him the villain?
He wants the glory. He wants the glory Scooby gets.
That's very selfish.
He's bad. So, getting back to, you know, the actual not Scooby-Doo stuff.
Right, right, right. Solving all the world's problems. Let's go.
It's ironic, kind of the origin of that unfinished business a ghost has, that unfinished business trope, because that kind of comes from the Catholic Church, which, I don't know, in my experience going through like CCD classes during Halloween, it was always like squeaky.
Yeah, sorry.
But like going through Catholic education classes around Halloween, it was always like, this stuff isn't good. And you shouldn't like think about ghosts or anything spooky like that. It's bad, you know?
Lame.
Yeah, dorks. And I think it's kind of ironic that that unfinished business aspect of ghost lore relates directly to the Catholic belief in purgatory. And this idea of purgatory is where, like, this is when the idea of ghosts haunting places really starts to take off. Are you familiar with what purgatory is?
A little bit, yeah.
Okay. So you may have questions about this. So I'm going to direct you to the Catechism of the Catholic Church, which is a collection of like the core beliefs of the Catholic Church. It's like, it's basically like the Catholic FAQ.
It's the Prima Strategy Guide of the Catholic Church.
Yeah. And like, okay. Like, I'm not kidding. Everything is numbered in there.
Perfect.
Which is super helpful. So you can just go to the table of contents and flip through. But yeah, this is this will explain what purgatory is, and I think you'll see pretty clearly like how ghost beliefs really took off from this.
Okay. 210. What is purgatory? Purgatory is the state of those who die in God's friendship, assured of their eternal salvation, but who still have need of purification to enter into the happiness of heaven. 211. How can we help the souls being purified in purgatory? Because of the communion of saints, the faithful who are still pilgrims on earth are able to help the souls in purgatory by offering prayers in suffrage for them, especially the Eucharistic sacrifice. They also help them by almsgiving, indulgences, and works of penance.
Yep. So if you were like living in medieval Europe at this time, everything was run by the Catholic Church.
Right.
You know, we talked about like ossuaries and all this stuff. Like, this is how you got educated. This is what your worldview was based on for the most part.
Right.
And then like, imagine you're hearing about all this like purgatory business, which is like heaven's waiting room. You've got something you didn't accomplish here on the earth that you're like kind of stuck waiting to get done before you can move on. You can see how this would create the idea of like, you know, ghosts as we think of them today, right?
Right.
Like
people still just hanging around.
Yeah. Because there's a message you need to give someone or justice that needs to be meted out.
Yes. Justice. That's it. Yeah. I'm just excited about justice.
Yeah. I like that.
I fucking love justice, dude.
Yeah, this really turned like ghosts into like a big thing. And this also ramped up the idea of haunted places. Places like military forts, castles where battles had taken place, really deadly forests where it was really easy to get like mugged or robbed and then killed. These were all places where the idea of like something happened that trapped a soul there would occur, and there would have to be like actions done to help those people move on to heaven. So like this is where you would like, you know, summon a priest to come out and bless the area, and the souls would be sated, and then they would leave that fort.
Right.
And it was very religious at the time. We don't really think of ghosts as being religious today, but at the time, the idea of ghosts was a very religious one. Like, you would call an exorcist to help the ghosts move to the next plane. The reason ghost lore kind of makes a break from religion is the Renaissance. As the Renaissance progresses, the idea of ghosts moves further and further away from the religious sphere and into a cultural one. That's because to and through the Middle Ages, everything was religion. Everything was the Catholic Church. When the Renaissance happens, culture outside of the church grows and religion becomes less and less important. And this is when we see like the word ghost becoming codified into the idea we have today. There's also images of ghosts in like Shakespeare plays. You know, ghosts become what we think of them now.
You know, ghosts go mainstream when Shakespeare starts writing about them.
Yeah, Shakespeare sucks, so.
Do you not like Shakespeare?
I don't like Shakespeare. I don't know.
I kind of like Shakespeare. But acknowledging that I like Shakespeare, Shakespeare is very, very basic, very mainstream. Everybody knows about Shakespeare.
I think you just need to see it performed, and I don't go to plays.
Yeah, so, that's fair.
But so one of the changes that moves ghosts out of religion is the creation of spirituality as a different concept than religion is. You know, the Renaissance is when you first start to see that, like, well, I'm spiritual, but not religious. This is where this goes back to.
Okay.
Things that are affiliated with the occult, like the dark arts and witchcraft, this stuff starts really ramping up. You see things like astrology happening a lot more. And they really progress into not even being like cultural or religious endeavors. Sometimes they end up being like straight up scientific. Like, you know, you can go back and listen to our necromancy episode. People were trying to bring dead people back to life because those types of experiments were centered around people wrestling with their belief in a soul. You know, like the story of Frankenstein. If you take a human body and shock it back to life with a lightning bolt, that meant that, like, souls weren't real and the brain was just kind of powered by electrical impulses. Like, that's why people thought that that type of experiment would work.
Mm-hmm. No ghost needed.
Yeah. And there were other people who were like, well, there is a soul and it is like a real thing. And that's why we can't bring bodies back to life. And we're going to talk in a bit here about a guy who tried to prove that scientifically, which is kind of fun.
Ooh.
But that fascination with the soul and spirituality that started during the Renaissance eventually morphs into the spiritualist movement. And that is a thing that started around the 1800s. That's when we start getting into, like, seances and Ouija boards, things like that. But it wasn't just that. There was less than legitimate scientific research, quote unquote scientific research, into the existence of the soul and ghosts specifically. And it all came to a head in the early 1900s with the 21 grams experiment. Do you know? Are you familiar with this? Have you heard about this?
Yeah, isn't it the theory that when the body dies, it weighs 21 grams less? And so it's assumed that that is the weight of the soul?
Yes. Yeah. This guy tried to prove the existence of the soul and pinned it down at 21 grams. The actual experiment is bonkers. I'm going to have you read about it here. This is really, really good. And when I say good, I mean, like, fucked up and also kind of funny. So,
it's my favorite combination. In 1901, Duncan McDougall, a physician from Haverhill, Massachusetts, wished to scientifically determine if a soul had weight. He identified six patients in nursing homes whose deaths were imminent. Four were suffering from tuberculosis, one from diabetes, and one from unspecified causes. McDougall specifically chose people who were suffering from conditions that caused physical exhaustion, as he needed the patients to remain still when they died to measure them accurately. When the patients looked like they were close to death, their entire bed was placed on an industrial-sized scale that was sensitive within 2/10 of an ounce, or 5.6 grams. On the belief that humans have souls and that animals do not, McDougall later measured the changes in weight from 15 dogs after death. McDougall said he wished to use dogs that were sick or dying for his experiment, though was unable to find any. It is therefore presumed he poisoned healthy dogs. A fluctuating weight was observed in one patient, and two of the other patients registered a loss of weight at death, but a few minutes later, lost even more weight. One of the patients lost 3/4 of an ounce, or 21.3 grams in weight, coinciding with the time of death. McDougall disregarded the results of another patient on the grounds that scales were, quote, not finely adjusted, and discounted the results of another as the patient died while the equipment was still being calibrated. McDougall reported that none of the dogs lost any weight after death.
Yeah, so I had heard about this experiment before. I didn't realize how wild it was.
So new listeners to the podcast, please know that we have a pre-Dead Boys Hall of Fame, you know, a Hall of Heroes for the special, you know, heroes of the death care industry and people who have made great strides in human advancement when it comes to matters related to death. We like to highlight them. Do we have like a hell, like a podcast hell? Because if you poison 15 dogs for a science experiment, you're dead to me in my book. You go to pre-Dead Boys hell.
Also like a shitty science experiment.
Yeah, he didn't even do a good job at his job. Like, this dude sucks ass.
I don't know where these scales are coming from, but they must have been like huge.
Yeah. If you can put a whole bed on them.
And one of the people that he actually measured resulted in the 21 gram weight loss. Like three of them just like lost weight, but then like gained it back. And it was very weird.
Right.
And
right. He only got one of the four patients that he took in.
One of the six. Because the other six. Two, he was like, "Oh, you died too soon." And the other one was just like, "I didn't have the scale right."
Right. Okay, so 50% of your original sample pool, you just like fucked up.
Yeah. And he took like the one result that kind of seemed like what he wanted and was like, "This is it, 21 grams.
Duncan McDougal, you are a shitty scientist. You're a despicable human being. A dog poisoner. Go fuck yourself."
And he should. He rightly should. But this wasn't some kook who was operating in a weird lab by himself. If you scroll down, you'll see a newspaper excerpt reporting on this experiment. This is from the New York Times. Like, the New York Times took note of this and wrote it up in their paper.
Should I read this?
If you want to, yeah.
"Soul has weight, physician thinks. Dr. McDougal of Haverhill tells of experiments at death. Lost to body recorded. Scales showed an ounce gone in one case, he says. Four other doctors present." Boston, March 10th. "That the human soul has a definite weight, which can be determined when it passes from the body, is the belief of Dr. Duncan McDougal, a reputable physician of Haverhill. He is at the head of a research society which for 6 years has been experimenting in this field. With him, he says, have been associated four other physicians."
Yeah. Again, New York Times did this write-up.
Uh-huh.
What I want this to do is illustrate how pervasive this belief in a physical soul has been throughout history.
Yeah, this is wild. Also, this is good news for us. You know, we're kickstarting the pre-Dead Boys hell in this episode, and it kind of sucks because we already have like a dozen or so heroes in the Hall of Fame. Uh-huh. It's kind of nice that we got a good strong start with five pieces of shit to throw in pre-Dead Boys hell.
Yeah, kind of balances
all
it
of
out.
These. Yeah, all of these doctors, they suck.
And they're like they were, I don't know, this idea that the soul could be collected or measured and like have an active presence is really, really strong even in the 1900s. When we think of ghosts now, we think it's almost like a metaphysical thing, you know? But these guys were pretty sold out to the idea that the soul was physical. It had a mass, you know? There was some kind of essence to a ghost that existed. Hmm. And, like, as we progress through history, you see that, like, this physical soul kind of morphs. Now, I don't think a lot of people believe that you lose 21 grams when you die because your soul exits your body. You know, there's some essence that makes a person, but it's not like a physical thing, which I think almost lends more credence to the idea that ghosts would exist if there's a spiritual aspect to us that can, like, linger. But for a long time, people were really stuck on this idea that, like, ghosts were physical. I want to close the episode out by talking about one of the most infamous attempts to contact these physical ghosts via seances. So, Dorian, we've talked about seances before. Do you remember the specific context?
In photography, yeah.
Yeah.
We were talking about the that good old, very accurate and believable ghost photography.
Yeah. I'm going to have you look a little more at some ghost photography here. But after the idea of ghosts kind of moves past the scientific, after scientists are like, I don't really buy this anymore, ghosts are pretty much in the domain of mediums for a long time. And mediums were people who could, like, talk to spirits, and they would do seances. And seances were, like, kind of a fad in, like, the Gilded Age, like, 1900s to the 1920s. Seances were big. And anytime you have a big industry like that, it's going to be kind of scammy. That's where we talked about, like, spirit photographers who were doing weird double exposures and having models dress up like ghosts to be like, ah, the ghost of Abraham Lincoln is looking over your shoulder. That means you're destined for great things or something like that, you know? But you would hope that the people who believed that they could do a seance would be more on the straight and narrow. But that wasn't really the case. I found a really good article from the Public Domain Review about a woman named Ava Carrere. And she convinced a lot of people that ghosts were real and that she could manifest them, and allowed people to take pictures of the ghosts. And what I'm going to have you read here is a review of a series of photographs from a book titled Phenomena of Materialization by Baron von Schrenck-Notzing.
Sorry, when you were talking about mediums, are you mispronouncing meaty yums? Is that what you mean to say?
The meaty yums.
Meaty yums?
How do you say the word? How would you say it?
I believe it's meaty yums.
Do you say that? Would you say that differently? I know I say, like, tour weird.
No, I just wanted to make a very stupid joke. That's all.
I was like, what? Been pronouncing that wrong my whole life?
No, it was
like a medium. Maybe I'll medium shirt. medium
a meaty
medium. Maybe I'd say medium.
No, I really just wanted to make a stupid meaty yum joke. That's really all it amounted to. I might edit that out.
I tell you what, terrible. With this $30 Uber Eats coupon, I'm gonna get a meaty yum tonight. Delivered to my house. Stupid.
All right. The book focuses on a series of seances that Schrenck-Notzing witnessed between the years 1909 and 1913, involving the French medium Ava Carrere, or Ava C. Born Martha Beraud, Carrere changed her name in 1909 to begin her career afresh, after a series of seances she held in 1905 were exposed as a fraud. Her psychic performances as Ava C. gained the attention of Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, author of the Sherlock Holmes mystery series, who believed she was genuine, and also Harry Houdini, who was not so convinced. Schrenck-Notzing, while initially skeptical, became convinced while photographing and researching Ava's work. It has been noted that these sessions with Schrenck-Notzing verged on the pornographic. Gynecological exams were undertaken at the start and end of each session to prove to the audience no ectoplasm was stored in Ava's nether regions. Ava would run about the room, channeling the spirits and causing ghostly manifestations to appear. She allowed the seances to be photographed, which she believed would enhance her credibility. The spiritualist debunker Harry Price wrote that the photographs taken by Shrek-Notzing, rather than proving the reality of Carrere's mediumship, in fact, did just the opposite. When investigated by the Society for Psychical Research, an analysis of her ectoplasm revealed it to be made of chewed paper, and the ghostly faces as cut from the French magazine Le Miroir. Back issues of the magazine matched some of Carrere's ectoplasm faces, including Woodrow Wilson, King Ferdinand of Bulgaria, and the French president Raymond Poincaré.
Yeah, so this is kind of as far as we're going to go in like modern ghosting, because seance culture in the early 1900s was wild. You had people like Arthur Conan Doyle and Harry Houdini battling with these mediums for the credibility and reality of these events. There's famously like the story about how Harry Houdini told his wife before he died, hold a seance every year, and I'm going to give you a code, and if ghosts are real, I promise I will come back and like make this mark or whatever. And so there's always been like a Houdini seance every year. And it's also kind of weird that like Arthur Conan Doyle, who has like a very like modern detective in Sherlock Holmes, was like, oh, this is totally real.
Right. We discussed that a little bit in that photography episode where like he was sold out for it,
Yep.
Which is crazy. Someone who champions logic and reason as a way of deducing reality. Yeah, I don't understand how that happened, but here we are.
Now, part of that may have been because, so you know how like spiritualism kind of evolved out of when ghosts were kind of dumped by science. This spiritualist movement evolved. Things were pretty buttoned up in the early 1900s, and spiritualism was pretty sexy.
Sounds like it.
A thing I edited out of what I had you read, while Ava C. was running around and channeling spirits, she would typically be jerking dudes off.
Hell yeah.
Like, that is a critique to the seances provided by contemporary sources. You know, people go in as skeptics and then they leave believing that these ghosts are real, but it's probably because she was in there like just basically like having sex with and jerking guys off who were trying to debunk her.
She was paying them off with hand jobs.
Yes.
What an incredible scam. Honestly, it's brilliant.
She was doing this like, I mean, there was a whole big thing where she would perform this act naked to prove she didn't have like ectoplasm stored anywhere. There was the exam you mentioned earlier.
God.
So you can kind of see why this belief was so maybe popular at the time.
Yep.
But it did result in some really, really good photographs. And Dorian, I know you love looking at these ectoplasm photographs. So I put four of them in here for you. These are the ghost photographs that convinced Baron von Shrek-Notzing that ghosts were real.
These convinced him that they're real.
Yes. Because again, like at the time, when you took a photograph of something, it was like, yeah, that's what happened.
Yeah, it was taken as law. Like, if a photograph existed of it, then it was incontrovertible proof.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
No way there were doctored photos or staged photos.
Yeah, they just didn't think people had it in them to, like, scam photographs like this, you know?
Do you think some of it was just, they just had good faith and, like, nobody would be so mean as to scam me into thinking there were ghosts? That'd be
people
mean.
People were pretty naive.
Yeah.
And I think Ava C. had a pretty easy job of it. When you get to like the third and fourth photos I've put in here. You'll see.
Okay. I just want to start off by saying thank you, Max. I have been dying ever since we did our photography episodes. I've been dying for more like fake ghost photos because these are so fucking funny. And I think you outdid yourself. I think these are even better than the last one. Right off the top, there is just this mischievous as fuck couple of photos of a woman with like the cloth stuffed in her mouth. Just like and peeking out from behind a curtain ever so coy, like
and like it's not a little bit, like, you know that image from The Simpsons of like Homer with like 100 cigarettes in his mouth at once? It looks like that. Like her mouth is like bulging with all of the cloth that she has jammed in there.
She looks like a hamster storing food in her mouth. It's just puffed up cheeks. Okay, yeah, I'm seeing a lot of, I'm seeing this gauze kind of, she's working the curtain to make it look like it's dancing and moving around and doing stuff. Here's one where she's sitting down and just looks kind of annoyed with a magazine clipping face taped to the top of her head.
Well, you know what she's doing there is she's focusing her attention on an attendee and pretending not to notice what's going on above her head. So at this moment, this person is like, what's that right behind you? And she's like, what are you talking about?
Yeah. Brilliant. And then is this Woodrow Wilson like superimposed on her? Like on her chest? I'm so confused at what I'm even looking at.
Part of what's confusing about this, and again, we will have all these photographs in the show notes, because she did these nude, when the photographs were taken and presented in these books, they would edit out like the nudity. And so they just like airbrushed her breast out.
They blurred out her boob.
Which makes it look very weird.
Yeah, it kind of gives it a more ghostly sort of,
yeah, like they kind of hurt them
sort of aura. Yeah.
But I believe that is French President Henri Poincaré with a fake mustache is what that is.
And it's so obviously a crumpled up piece of paper. You can see the flaps and the wrinkles of the paper flipping up over her tummy.
Yeah. But if you had never seen like a photograph before and you didn't believe they could be doctored, you'd be like, I don't know how that got there or what that is. Maybe it's an apparition, you know?
Must be.
And like,
what a scam.
Yeah. But like, this was a massive part of ghost culture and how people understood ghosts for like the first couple decades of the 20th century. Like, it's hard to understate how big of a cultural phenomenon this was. At the same time, like, Ouija was gaining traction as, like, a parlor game for rich people to play. You'd, like, play it with all your fancy, like, Gatsby friends while someone drowns in a pool out back.
Whoa, spoiler.
Spoiler from 100 years ago. But, yeah, like, this was a massive cultural phenomenon that people were engaging with like pretty good faith. And I think that as we've progressed as a society, this, the like holdover from seances of being like someone is controlling the performance, quote unquote, and kind of telling you what you're seeing. That's what I see a lot in like modern ghost stuff. Like when you look at like electronic voice phenomenon and people going into a house or a manor at night with like the infrared where everything's like green and black. Mm-hmm. And then a little like something like moves in the corner of the screen and it's highlighted with the red circle. And they're like, if you see here, you'll see the ghost fleeing. This is kind of the early version of where we're at with ghosts today. And again, it's a very Western concept of what a ghost is. and maybe we'll do like a deeper dive into other how other cultures view ghosts at some point. But I think it's kind of cool how you can kind of track the modern almost showmanship of ghost hunting to this seance ritual.
Yeah, it is really cool. And thank you, Max, for putting this together, because it was very informative.
You sound bummed.
Yeah, I'm just, you know, we really poked a lot of holes in a lot of theories about ghosts. I'm just feeling my agnosticism about ghosts' existence turn into a little bit of a bitter, jaded sort of skepticism, you know. What's that? You're looking at your camera, making some concerned faces. What is it?
What's that?
What do you see?
What's that shadow behind? Is one of your roommates in your room with you?
No.
Hello? Who's there?
What is that?
Oh, shit. Dude, ghosts might be real. Well, it sounds like we've got some further investigating to do, but you go ahead. What were you going to say?
No, I did bum you out there. Do you have any, like recommendations for ghost movies or like favorite ghost stories that you'd recommend?
I don't know. I'm sad to hear your kind of tepid response to The Haunting of Bly Manor on Netflix, in part because The Haunting of Hill House, the predecessor series to that, was very good,
yeah.
Very well done.
Yeah.
Also a lot of really interesting details. I know we've got some morticians and funeral workers listening to the podcast. They've got some, like, I guess from what I understand, some true to life little observations about what being in that industry is like. So that's pretty cool. Mm-hmm. I highly recommend Host on Shudder. It's a Shudder exclusive. It's a very, very good little spooky movie. Yeah, I don't know. There's some good stuff out there. You got your poltergeists and your other classics.
I do want to recommend that Astonishing Legends series. It's on Sally House. I haven't made it all the way through, but if you are into ghost stuff, I think you should give that a listen, because they do a pretty good deep dive in like into the history of this house, and they went there. I don't know. I turned it off, but it sounds like they found something that they do believe in.
Okay. Great recommendation. That podcast is awesome.
Yeah,
Those guys do a great job of covering, you know, if you like what we do, but you want less facts about death and more of an exploration of those weird kind of unexplained stories and myths, definitely look up Astonishing Legends.
Yep.
Those guys are great. Well, cool, man. Thanks for putting this together and nearly ruining, but not totally destroying my belief in ghosts. Maybe we should do another episode on this. I'd definitely be interested in, you know, talking about how different cultures have handled ghosts and what the significance of those beliefs has been in different ways. So if you like this episode, you think, you know, should we do more series on ghosts? Or if you just have any kind of general feedback for us, we love hearing from y'all. We love talking to y'all. You can reach out to us. We are on Twitter and Instagram at PreDeadBoys. You can email us, predeadboys@gmail.com. If you want to join our Facebook group, just search for PreDeadBoys Podcast. And if you want to join our Discord server, where we have all kinds of fun conversations going on, ask for an invite to that and we can send that your way.
Hell yeah.
If you like what we do and you want to support the podcast, the best way to do that is to join our Patreon. Like Max said, we're going to have our show notes on there. We're going to share with you all the articles that were quoted and the images that I got to look
ghost
at and
pictures.
Laugh at. Yes, you can look at these ghost photos and decide what you believe. So make sure you go to patreon.com/predeadboys. The show notes are free, but if you want to financially support us, you get some extra goodies. If you support us for $5 a month, you get wallpapers for your desktop and mobile devices, and also access to bonus episodes. We just talked about The Lighthouse, and that's a great spooky movie for the spooky movie season. If you want to hear all about that and how that was made and what's interesting about that, look up that episode. We're also going to do an episode about Mandy, just one more little spooky movie for the spooky season. We're going to discuss it and drop that by the end of the month, so keep an eye out for that. Again, that is patreon.com/predeadboys. Max, it's been a while. It's been a while since we've recorded, and we've had a number of new patrons that I want to give a shout out to. For $1 a month, we've got Shirley Dark. Thank you, Shirley. And for $5 a month each, we have Hannah Peacock and Tarek Mezian. And Tarek is a friend of mine who actually sent us an email with a pile of episode suggestions. So thanks for that, Tarek. We'll take a look at that. We'll see if we can find some good, juicy stuff for future episodes. But yeah, we appreciate it. Again, if anybody wants to message or email us with anything you think would be interesting for our death podcast to explore, send that our way.
Yeah.
We'd love to hear that. But thank you to everybody who supports our Patreon, and just that little extra money per month helps us continue what we do and make bonus stuff for you. And we really appreciate it. If you can't or don't want to financially support us, that's okay. We still love you. You can't buy our love.
No.
We give it away for free.
Free love, baby. Like Charles Manson.
Free love. What? Walk that one back. Hey, Dorian patching in here later after editing the episode. Wanted to remind you guys that you can also leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher, and we will read it right here on the podcast. We actually got a new review from Gothic Dumpster. They say, "A blessing from the Lord." They spell Lord with an E at the end, so I don't know if this person thinks that we're sponsored by the singer, a critically acclaimed singer Lord. Anyway, they say, "As a future corpse, I love learning about all the great things that are going to happen to me someday. Thanks for making my morning commutes way more bearable than they otherwise would be, and thanks for spreading the message of death positivity." Thank you, Gothic Dumpster, for the very kind words. We really appreciate it. But the best way that you can support the podcast by far, even better than the Patreon, is just tell people about this podcast, share it on your social media, you know, send the link to your favorite episode to a friend. We don't do any advertising or anything like that. The way that this podcast became what it is just purely word of mouth and us just trying to make the best production that we can. And we want to keep doing that. We do not want to bow to any corporate sponsor.
No, no way.
Fuck them.
Ever.
No, we're
except
indie.
LaCroix.
We're indie as hell. Well, in, you know, ball's in their court. We've been trying to contact them.
For years.
We've been bouncing around to different seltzer companies, shopping around, and nobody's biting the bait. So until then, share this episode. Share your favorite episode of Pre-Dead Boys with your friends. We would really appreciate that. Our intro and outro music is the song About Time by Brat Curse. Make sure you check them out at bratcurse.bandcamp.com. And also look them up on Spotify or wherever you stream music. Jam out to some good Central Ohio punk rock.
Hell yeah.
And that's going to do it for us. Max, who hurt you? Why do you hate ghosts?
I'm spooked out by them, man. They kind of freak me out a little bit. I don't know. I think I just watched too much Ghost Hunters and stuff when I was a kid.
What's the worst thing that you think could happen if a ghost is real and wants to hurt you? What's the worst that could happen?
It'd like scratch me or something.
That's it?
Yeah, probably.
That's it.
My dog does that all the time, but...
Yeah, exactly. Wait, do we know that Julep is not a ghost?
No, I can Where'd see her. Go? I can see her right now. She's in there.
You saw a ghost.
Oh, no.
Boom. Confirmed. Confirmed. Max is now a ghost believer. It happened over the course of us recording this podcast.
And my dog.
Amazing. This is the best episode ever. Let's cut it off there. Max and Dorian here reminding you, you're going to rot. You and your hair today.
My hair is...
It looks good.
There we go.
It's just you're like...
There we go.
You seem uncomfortable with yourself. You keep putzing futzing over it.
Yeah, it's getting in the very long stage.
Yeah.
Where it's just floppy, man.
That quarantine quaff coming in strong.
I can chew on it if I want to. That's yeah. fun. Yeah.
Do you want to? Chew on hair?
No. Not normally.
Didn't that happen in Uzumaki or some Junji Ito?
When someone ate a bunch of hair?
There is something about J-horror involving hair, eating hair, and hair coming out of mouths and stuff like that.
Well, that's not like Uzumaki. That's
no. Where have I seen that? I don't know. Anyway, happy Halloween.
Happy Halloween.